25, side A. Continuing the oral interviews with Mr. Fred Bean.
19.
I'm visiting with Fred Bean, and he had quite an honor on June 3rd, 1982, with the Optimist Club. And what was the occasion?
It was June 3rd of 1982. It was supposed to be in honor of me for being the president 50 years prior. And they were going to give me a perpetual gavel. And that was it. And they started it in by a very small announcement in our club paper, which is the Optum News. And the first was very small, the next one was twice as big, and the last one was practically a full page program. But it grew from a club activity to the city of Los Angeles and to the county of Los Angeles. So I was really honored as Fred S. Bean Day for Long Beach. A lot of my friends were there, especially the past governors and past vice presidents and past presidents of the Optimist International. And Dudley Williams was the past international president. I installed him in the Uptown San Diego Club when he was president of that club the second year the club was going. And I chartered that club when it was chartered. And Lord Larry Crowe was at this meeting, and he was the first president of that club. And I thought it was quite an honor to have two fellows that I had chartered their club and made them presidents were at my meeting. They had a chairman, Ben Cooper was chairman. And he read over a list of the activities of where I had been president or campaign chairman or manager of things or assistant manager of the different charitable things that I had been, such as Boy Scouts and Optimist Home for Boys, the Chamber of Commerce, and I was president of the Chamber of Commerce in 1951. And they honored that along with the other things that I had. And the next week they come out with a list of things that they read off of this thing, and it took a whole page the Optimist to put it on. It was quite an honor, and Mayor Saddle gave me a proclamation from the city of Long Beach, naming it Fred S. Bean Day for the city of Long Beach, and the chairman of the Pacific Southwest District gave me a plaque representing the county of Los Angeles, the district of that the Long Beach Club is in, the Pacific Southwest District, of which I was governor of that district. Before it was cut down in size, it's only one-fourth as big as it was when I was governor. And when I was governor in 1946, he also brought attention to the fact that during the year that I was governor, that I developed more Optimist clubs in this district than anybody else has done before or afterwards in their year. I doubled the size of the district in number of clubs. When I took over, there was 26, and when I got through, there was 51.
Is that why they had to divide it? You had so many?
Well, it was getting too many for any one person to take care of. And I received a very nice testimonial letter from Hugh Cranford of the Executive Vice President of Optimist International, and he says in it that the Optimist Club doesn't have a day for anybody, but in my case, he said he thought it was very fitting because that I had done so much starting 50 years ago when I was president to work for Optimus International and see it would go forward. I also received from Dean Denna, the supervisor of this district of Los Angeles County, a beautiful, I guess you would call it a scroll, of commendation from the Board of Supervisors of Los Angeles County.
That's really a beautiful piece. Do you think that that was done by hand, or hand-printed, or hand-painted?
Hand-painted, I think. And then I received from Long Beach Optimist Club a pen and gavel set that was given to me from the club for representing the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Mayor Sato gave a beautiful talk on her presentation of me at the time that she presented me with the proclamation from the city of Long Beach. They finally gave me the gavel. It was the original idea of a perpetual gavel that said, in honor of Fred Dean, of 50 years of service in the Optimus Club since he was president, he gave me this perpetual gavel with orders that I could only tap the gong once, and if I tapped it the second time, it would be fined $10. They told me then I was supposed to pass it on to the present president of the Optimus Club, and then when he finished his term, he'd pass it on to the next one, and so on, making the perpetual gavel in my honor for years to come. So when I handed the gavel, I whammed the bell twice as loud as I could, and everybody in the audience practically said, "I knew he would." So we had a great time out of it, and the house, there were so many reservations come in that we had to change the dining room from the dining room that we started to have to the present dining room, which was twice as big, in order to hold the crowd. And practically all the past governors from the 14th District and the Pacific Southwest District and the Pacific South District were there. And so I was really honored by them for the things I had done. And I didn't realize I had been doing so much, but I enjoyed it so much, doing things for the city of Long Beach and meeting with the people I met in Long Beach, and some of these people I've had friends, their friendship as long as they lived, and it was really nice to kind of reminisce when he was reading off the things I did.
Well, I want to know, did you pay your $10 fine for ringing the bell twice?
I offered it and they wouldn't accept it. So it was, anyhow, the whole party was really a wonderful party, and I've gotten letters from a lot of friends of mine telling of what I did when they were governor or when they were vice president or past president, what the work I had put in to help them make a success of their year, and I was glad that they remembered it.
Now, you had mentioned that Mrs. Sato was there.
Sato?
Yeah, the mayor.
Yeah.
And you were going to tell me what it was that you'd said to her, or she'd said to you, or...
I think I better leave that off the record.
Because you had been involved with her.
Oh, yeah, I'd been involved with her because I was kind of the self-elected chairman of the Long Beach Equestrian Group to try to keep our stables in Long Beach, and she was bound it was going to go out, and she put through a motion that was really unorthodox the way it was handled between the mayor, Clark, and herself.
Mm-hmm.
After they had excused us and said that we could all leave, the mayor told us we could all leave and come back at 1:30. when he got back at 1:30, I says, "Don't we come on now?" And he says, "Well, it's already done." And I says, "What?" And so the secretary for the city clerk, rather, said that when he adjourned the speaker that was speaking in, it adjourned the meeting then, that Miss Sato raised her hand and said, "I have a motion before the House." And the mayor says, "That's right, you do. Is there any objection to the motion?" And the dean, when we were all gone, there was none. So the council, without asking what the motion was, voted for it and voted us out of business.
Do you live in the mayor's district?
I live in her district. She is the mayor of the district, 6th district. This is it.
Well, have you had any other problems with her as far as...
No.
I mean, this is the basis of your disagreement.
Yeah.
Your
horses.
Yeah.
And the worst thing is that a big percentage of our riders over there are children, young girls, and their parents practically turn them over to us to watch out for them. And they come over there on Saturdays and nights after school and groom their horses and ride them and so forth. And those horses will all be out of the area, and there won't be any place for those girls to go. They'll have to go over the other side of the flood control under the PE lines or something, and they won't have the county bridle path that is set up for them to go on.
Mm-hmm.
At the present time, the county has done a wonderful job for Long Beach, and if we got a bridle path that goes from Long Beach clear to Whittier, and we can go through it practically any time except in heavy flood waters.
Hmm. So it uses the flood control basin then?
Yeah, you use the just back of the levees.
Uh-huh.
On the flood control. And it really, when the county did that, they did a great deal for the equestrian people of Long Beach.
Well, we started this interview talking about your big day with the Optimist, and I'm kind of curious about what is Optimist and what
they... Can I go?
Oh,
Optimist,
where
are you? The Optimist Club is a service club. There were a few Optimist Clubs back in 1919 that joined together. None of them were affiliated at the time, but they in different towns. They had started clubs, and they called it their service club, Optimist Club, patterning after Rotary. It's a club that does the things in the city that needs to be done in a non-political way, but in a constructive way. Our club happened to be the one that's the friend of the boy. And when we started our club, we called it the friend of the delinquent boy. Then we decided that the boys were not delinquent. The people who took care of the boys were delinquent and not helping them things, so we changed the friend of the boy. And since the woman's appeal for women to have equal rights, our club has accepted girls into junior Optimist clubs, and in some cases the clubs have accepted women in. We did not have any racial barrier in our clubs before, so that didn't have to affect either racial or religion. But now we call it the Friend of Youth. Our club was one of the first clubs that was formed after the merging of these clubs to start the Optimist Club International in 1919.
Mm-hmm.
Our club was formed in 1921, and I was taken in as a member of the club in the first meeting in May of 1924, and I am still a member after 28 years.
Different Optimist clubs have different objectives,
Our Optimist Club principally is built around youth.
Mm-hmm.
The
but
friend of youth.
You say the Optimist Club, do you mean the Long Beach group or the Southern California?
The international group.
The international group, then.
And we have about 200 clubs now in the state of California. In Los Angeles County, we have the Optimist Home for Boys, of which I was vice president for 12 years. And we bought the home, we was given the home by the Strickland family. It was the land it was on up on Annandale Avenue. Now it's called North Figueroa. The home now is developed into a beautiful, they have a beautiful gymnasium. They have a junior high school. They have two beautiful dormitories, a chapel, and these things are all donated by the money that was raised within our Optimist clubs to take care of them. We never went out on solicitations for the general public. We've done it by our members.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with the County of Los Angeles. The Juvenile Bureau works with us. And we've got number one claim on all the boys that come out that have been in some trouble, that they have to be cleared up on it. And we've got another one in DeVore, which is we call it the farm, the Optimus Farm. And it just got a new building, just dedicated the building last month. That was in April of 82, they developed this building, and now they're just raising enough money to get the fence around it, and it cost $10,000 to put a fence around the ground we have there.
What kind of a fence do they need? Is it just something to mark the boundaries, or something as a deterrent?
The fence is more or less to, so the people won't cross the vacant land, and the kids will play within their own area, and it's a chain link fence, a 6-foot chain link fence is what they're putting up. It's not a fence to keep the kids in, because the front end of it's going to be wide open. It's just a fence around the back to keep animals and so forth, because it's in the outlying district. A lot of people were riding their horses through that area when we started building. So things of that type is what the clubs do, but when we first started with the Optimist Club, each club would get some member of their club to take in a boy or two or three boys and take care of them and be assigned from the court to them to handle for the length of their time rather than put them in juvenile hall.
Well, these were like foster homes for these boys then?
It was practically what a foster home today is, but it was privately run, and the minute they turned them over to us, the matrons or the women that was working out of the juvenile department would check them like a probation officer to see if things was going all right. But now we have hired and have them working with us two women that have passed all the requirements and have become officers of the juvenile department's program.
Mm-hmm.
And their office right in our new club office there on Figueroa Boulevard. So
this is at the home up there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have right close to 70 boys in the home. When I left the home as an officer, I left the home, we had 57 boys in that time.
Mm-hmm. How long do the boys generally stay at that?
Well, some of them stay for just a year, some of them stay for 2 or 3 years. It's according to what the offense they got put in by, and the juvenile judge sentenced to so many days or so much time, and they were sentenced to us. We developed the one thing that the Strickland home didn't have. They had the boys all in what they called the Strickland school, and it was practically all boys that were sentenced by the court there, and a lot of people moved out of the area because they didn't want to be around the bad boys with their children.
Now, is this the home that you mentioned that was on
Figueroa?
North, yeah.
So then, when I was there, I put up a campaign to get the board of supervisors to accept our boys into their schools, and so they went to the schools that were up there in that territory to mix. I said that you'll never be able to get these boys to be rehabilitated if you keep them together, because all they know is what the other bad boy knew, But when you go to the classes in the end, we got them in there. We got them in the YMCA. We got them in the Boy Scouts and so forth. And now we got a program of send them home a certain amount of time. And they have to come back and report back to us on what they did. And it's turning out very good. We're making good citizens out of the boys.
How do the optimists raise money? Is it through dues or?
It's principally the fining, and then by the fact that you figure that you want to give some money to do the boys' work. All service clubs raise their money practically by finding a fella for having a birthday, or for buying a new automobile, or for going on a vacation, or for getting his name in the paper. Anything they can think of that comes up, they'll find you for. And they find the fellas according to what they can give.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find them with on account of another basis is that they... how much interested they are in the project.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, that when we built the dormitories up there, we assessed the fellas as much as they wanted to give. The assessment was not a dollar and cents assessment by turn, but it was assessment for a job to be done. And you could sign up for how much you wanted to give to it. And you could give it over... at once, you can give over a period of a year or a couple of years, and the service clubs use that pretty much the same. They don't bear down on a person too much to get them to give, because they want them to give because they want to give.
Yeah.
Our membership, but practically all of our people in our group are people that believe in the future of the youth.
Mm-hmm. So that's the big difference between Optimus, say, and Rotary or some of the...
No, Rotary does a terrific job. Rotary went in behind the Adventure Clinic out here.
Mm-hmm. And they one of the community hospitals?
Yes, they supported that. And I think they still do. They give their money into that. And they have several others. Lions Club worked with the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're working a whole lot with the hard hearing people. And they put on a solicitation of where that they white cane solicitation. So they have done a good job. Kiwanis has done a terrific job with the Boy Scouts. And they're all interested in developing people so that they get enough activity so that to keep away from having gangs.
It's moving now, and my light's popping. And I'd asked you about your activities with the Boy Scouts in Long Beach.
My activities, I was on the board, and I was vice president in charge of activities. The activities were when the boys went on a camping trip, or a sea scouting group went out to sea, or they were in a parade, or practically any activity they had to get permission from the paid scout director that was under me, that was in my department. So I become very well acquainted with the operation of boys and the Boy Scouts, and worked with them, spent lots of time. I haul boys, every week I'd haul a group of boys to Camp Talkwas, a beautiful building up there at, where they fed the boys and took care of them and all, and they camped out.
Where was Camp Talkwas?
Camp Talkwas is in Idlewild. And it was a beautiful place. We had a nice big swimming pool and everything else. It was really something. And then the Depression came along and hit us hard. And so Mr. Ackling, who was the scout director for the area, and I decided that we recommended the board that we close the dining room, and we would teach the boys how to cook their own meals. So we went into it, and we had classes with scoutmasters and told them how to handle the boys and all. And then when I'd take these boys up to camp. I'd take a load up and bring them back a load. I'd leave about 2 o'clock in the morning with a load from the Grace ME Church, as well as our meeting place to do it, and go up there and come back to the Grace ME Church and let them out, and then I'd go back to my work. I had a 10-and-a-half truck, and we just had sideboards on it and a big canvas over the top of it, so all the boys couldn't get up and holler or do anything. They were in there.
What church was that that you...
Grace ME, Grace Methodist Church, mm-hmm. out on Wanapair on 3rd Street. And, in fact, I had a scout troop at that. I was a scoutmaster in that troop. But we outgrew our overnight camp, which was out at the corner of Exelimo and 7th Street on the southeast corner. And the recreation department owned the property and was going to make a golf course out of it, too, so they were going to need it for that. And so Mr. Appling and I did everything we could to try to find a place in the area, and we finally found a place on the north side of the Union Pacific Track and east of the Los Angeles River and west of Long Beach Boulevard and south of the Virginia Country Club. And it was a nice place there. We looked in the records and found out who owned it. It was owned by a man by the name of Cotton, who lived in San Clemente. He lived in the same house that Nixon did when he had the West Coast White House there. We went down and told him that we wanted that land, and he said it wasn't his. And we said, well, the record shows you've been paying the taxes on it up to date. And he said, well, if I've been doing that, he said, I didn't know it. He said, well, I might as well just keep and forget it. And we said, well, the boys need it. And he said, well, he couldn't do anything about it. He didn't want to. He'd look it up later. So I went to Will J. Reed, who was very close to the Boy Scouts, and asked Will if he wouldn't talk to Mr. Cotton, because both of them were oil men. Mr. Cotton was the secretary treasury of Jergens Oil Company. And so Will said yes, he would.
Well, which oil company was Mr. Reed with?
He's the one that started Tums here in Long Beach. He built that one up. And he was, I think, he was connected with the Hancock Oil Company here. He was a very good close friend of Hancock's, and I think he was. He never talked much about anything, but he said he would, and he called me up one day, and he said, Fred, he says, would you and Appling go down to the security bank and sign up how you want that property put in your name? So he says, yes, we would, but he says, how are we going to pay for it? And how much you pay for it? He says, well, that's my business, is this. And he says, I'm not telling you, but he says, it's not costing you anything. And he says, it's not going to be 100% yours, because I'm buying it on terms so that I can use it for charity, to use up part of my charitable income tax. And so we went down and signed up for it, and we named the park Will J. Reed Boy Scout Park. And it's still going, and they have overnight camps there. And we even allow some girls to camp there at certain times. And we have afternoon and evening programs for Cub Scouts. And the Explorer Scouts meet there for some of their deals. He was very instrumental in that, and it's become a very nice camp. And Will J. Reed also built the executive offices on 37th Street and Elm Avenue for us, and donated them to us for that. He was really a fellow that did a lot for Boy Scouts, and we've always a kidding deal about me being in charge of spending their money, and the Kiwanis Club was ready.